Live from the nation's capital, President Joe Biden and comedian Colin Jost headlined the White House Correspondents' Dinner. See all the biggest stars together in one room live April 27th at 8 p.m. on CNN and streaming on Max.
Good evening. John Berman here in for Anderson on the first night of what could be a very long, tense week for people in this country and around the world. That's because the market suffered an unprecedented point drop today. In Italy, a country of 60 million people effectively closed all its borders to the world. Now, all of that happening as passengers are finally disembarking from a cruise ship now at port in Oakland. At a news conference just a short time ago, Vice President Pence said 21 were infected on the ship. However, none of them children. President Trump was also there, or should we say he was there briefly. He used his time to explain that the outbreak is, quote, not our country's fault and was, quote, something we were thrown. Also to talk about a stimulus package he hopes Congress will pass. But then the president left the room before taking any questions. And we want to play you that moment because tonight the health of the president is now a concern after several Republican allies in Congress, some who have had recent contact with the president, announced they have self-quarantined after coming in contact with someone who was infected. Here is that moment after reporters tried to ask whether the leader of the free world has been tested.
Have you been tested?
I have not been tested for the coronavirus.
Has the president been tested?
He's been in contact with people who were in proximity to somebody who had the virus.
Let me be sure and get you an answer to that. I honestly don't know the answer to the question, but we'll refer that question and we will get you an answer from the White House physician very quickly.
The vice president doesn't know if the president has been tested, and we still haven't received an answer from the White House. Now, here is what we do know at this time about the president's health. Four Republican members of Congress have self-quarantined themselves after saying they came in contact with an individual at a recent conservative political action forum who has tested positive for the virus. Ted Cruz, Dr. Paul Gosar, Matt Gaetz, and Doug Collins. Congressman Collins of Georgia shook the president's hand after exiting Air Force One in Atlanta on Friday, after Congressman Collins came in contact with the infected individual. And then there's Congressman Matt Gaetz of Florida. Today, he rode with the president aboard the presidential limo as well as Air Force One. Gaetz was also a dinner guest of the president Saturday evening, spending the weekend with President Trump at Mar-a-Lago. Now, Gaetz had previously appeared to mock coronavirus prevention. He appeared on the House floor last week in a gas mask during a vote on funding for coronavirus prevention, and he tweeted out a photo of himself in that same gas mask while in his office. By the way, all of that happened before this weekend when a constituent of his died from the coronavirus. Today, his office responded to the gas mask controversy. Quote, Congressman Gaetz had expected COVID-19 to impact Congress given the elevated frequency of travel and human contact, and demonstrated his concern last week on the House floor. He demonstrated it all right. Interestingly, President Trump attended the same CPAC conference as the four congressmen who have self-quarantined. That was on February 29th, 9 days ago. President Trump said of the coronavirus, quote, everything is under control, unquote. And he said it twice. Let's start with Boris Sanchez at the White House tonight. Boris, as we mentioned, Vice President Pence, he couldn't or wouldn't say whether the president has been tested. Is that still the case?
Yeah, we don't have any clarity on that at this point, John. You heard Vice President Mike Pence there say at the podium that he would give some clarity to the press. He sort of struggled to answer the question, ultimately acknowledging that he himself had not been tested. He said that he didn't know what the White House's physician's advice was to Trump on that. We should point out, as you saw there, the president totally ignored the question, quickly walked out of the room before answering any questions from reporters. We should also note that the president, just this weekend, over the last few days, has ignored the advice of top experts when it comes to senior citizens protecting themselves from the coronavirus. He's attended a number of fundraisers with hundreds of people in attendance, shaking a lot of hands, John.
So what more is the White House saying about the president's interactions with Congressman Gaetz and Doug Collins?
Yeah, not much at all. Press Secretary Stephanie Grisham didn't answer questions I sent her after this news came forward. The White House has maintained that President Trump is fine and that he's healthy. He himself has made clear that this isn't a huge concern for him. But it seems that the tide is turning, specifically when you watch the Dow Jones drop 2,000 points in a single day. That really has gotten the president's attention, especially going into this 2020 re-election campaign.
There is no question about that. And that's clearly what he wanted to focus on at this news conference, saying that tomorrow he'll hold a press event where he'll announce some kind of economic relief. What was the president talking about there? And does the White House think it'll be enough to stem the losses on Wall Street?
It's really an open question at this point. From what we understand, the president met with aides this afternoon, going over a draft, different ideas, opinions of what an economic stimulus package would look like. The White House has repeatedly said that they would look to help the airline industry, the cruise industry, support tourism and travel in that regard. There's been speculation about a potential payroll tax. It would also not be a surprise if we see some kind of help for the energy sector as well with this price war over oil going on between Saudi Arabia and Russia. There's less demand for oil. We may see the White House try to boost that. The big question on the horizon, and we're still several steps from this, but it's an important one to keep in mind. How will Democrats respond to this? Are they willing to help the president pass an economic stimulus package that might turn the tide with the way that the White House has handled this coronavirus crisis and help the president boost the economy, avoid a slowdown going into November?
All right, Boris Sanchez at the White House. Boris, keep on pressing and let us know if you get any answers tonight. I want to bring in CNN Chief Medical Correspondent Dr. Sanjay Gupta to talk more about what we heard at this news conference just a short time ago. And Sanjay, what do you make of the fact that the vice president couldn't say whether or not President Trump has been tested for coronavirus?
Well, you know, I was a little surprised they didn't know, only because it's been such a topic in the news today and everyone's been talking about it, reporting on it. So that was a little surprising. The president walked out, John. I don't know if you saw before he could take those questions. So I think the vice president was a little surprised. At first, he thought he was being asked if he had been tested. So I think there was a little confusion there. I do want to say one thing, though, John. So the scenario basically is that these congressmen, Gates and Collins, interacted with somebody who was subsequently found to be positive for coronavirus, and then they interacted with the president. It's not clear whether Congressman Collins or Gates have coronavirus themselves. And I think that's going to be an important question. Mm-hmm. I bring it up only to say, John, that, you know, as we move forward over the next days and weeks, who should get tested, I think, is going to be a question that comes up. Should you get tested if you came in contact with somebody who was known to have a coronavirus? The answer may be no. I mean, the White House doctors may say, hey, look, we think we'll watch you, see if you develop any symptoms, but we don't necessarily want to make this precedent that everybody who has second or third degree contact should go out and get tested, John.
And the members' offices do tell us that as of now, those members are all asymptomatic. Another big part of this news conference was the idea that these CDC guidelines, the new pieces of paper, are coming out. What do you make of this, Sanjay? I suppose any information is good, although maybe it's a little late for some of this.
Well, you know, and Dr. Fauci did describe it as being very basic information about how to essentially protect yourself at home, at your business and restaurants, whatever it may be. And we haven't seen it yet. I guess it's going to be coming out later tonight or tomorrow morning. But I think it's going to be a lot of stuff that has been discussed, I think, peripherally in terms of hand washing and disinfecting and the appropriate distance to stay away from somebody. How do you interact with people at a restaurant in terms of lowering your risk of getting infected. I think you're right, John. I mean, we've been hearing about this, but it's been sort of piecemeal. I think what they realize, and they being Dr. Anthony Fauci and Ambassador Birx, that there probably needed to be a more coherent sort of way of presenting all this information to the entire American public. This is supposed to be for everybody. So, yeah, I mean, you kind of wish that they would have had this sooner, although they've been talking about it. Now we're going to have it in a more organized form.
Just overall, Sanjay, what were your big takeaways from this briefing?
I think the biggest takeaway from me, when you observe the president at the beginning, and I was there at the first press briefing that he did around this topic, and I did get the sense that this time around there was an acknowledgement, more of an acknowledgement by the president that this was a big deal. Before, I think it was still sort of, not necessarily recognized. And he had just come back from India. I think he was a bit surprised that he had to talk about it. This time, he said basically, look, everybody's talking about it. I get it. Everyone around the world is talking about it. This is the big topic. So he acknowledged that. And he talked mostly about the economy, but he did bring up some specific things like helping workers who might have to stay home. We're asking people to stay home, but maybe they can't afford to, an acknowledgement of details like that. So I think that was good. But again, he spoke for a very short time.
He did, which was notable. We'll get to that in a minute. Sanjay, thank you very much. We have a lot more to discuss with you coming up. First, though, I want to talk with a veteran with years of service working on an array of Washington crises, former White House Chief of Staff Leon Panetta, who also served as Defense Secretary and CIA Director. Secretary Panetta, are you surprised that Vice President Pence couldn't say or wouldn't say whether President Trump has been tested for coronavirus, given that the president interacted with people who had come in contact with someone who now has coronavirus?
That was kind of not a smart move by the vice president. I think both the president and he knew that that question was coming because of the fact that he had had contact with members of Congress who have now quarantined themselves. So I think they should have been better prepared to have responded to that question, because it is a critical question.
And then it struck me that the president, after floating a payroll tax cut and some other wage benefits, he left. He walked out of the news conference early. I'm wondering why you think the White House perhaps didn't want him taking questions.
It's the president of the United States, the commander in chief, if you will, who's got to stand up there and speak to the American people about what's happening and what we're doing to try to deal with it. I thought it would have been far better, frankly, not even to have the president go out there, because it created the impression that the president was not fully knowledgeable about what is happening with the virus, did not want to speak to it, and instead wanted to mention the fact that he was going to meet with senators tomorrow to talk about an economic package. Which is all well and good, but the fact that he went out there, did not speak directly to the issue that American people are concerned about, and immediately went off stage, I just thought it left me with a sense that the president, for a lot of reasons, does not seem to have his arms around this issue, and does not feel comfortable addressing it as he should have addressed it at that press conference.
What does it tell you that you have concerns about the president of the United States participating in a news conference about coronavirus? That's pretty extraordinary.
Well, you know, it strikes me that the president, for the last few weeks as we've been dealing with this crisis, has tried to play down the threat of this virus. He's concerned about its impact. He's concerned about what it's doing to the economy. He's concerned about what it's doing to his presidency. And so as a result of that, I think he's trying to put the best face on it without really relying on the scientific facts and the medical facts that are so apparent. I appreciate the vice president, and I appreciate the whole medical team that was there, because I at least had the sense that they were presenting the facts and the truth to the American people. I don't think this president has come face to face with the truth of what's happening. As long as that's the case, I have a feeling that we're not going to see the president doing many briefings on what's happening with the coronavirus.
You know, every public health expert I speak with says that in a crisis situation, the number one ingredient for public health is public trust. So I guess the question is, what happens when a leader forfeits some element of public trust?
Well, you know, the problem is this president has had a hard time with the truth since he entered the presidency and before that. You know, the American people want to be able to trust what the president is saying to them. But in many ways, he's forfeited that trust by the fact that he continues to shade the truth. The most important thing in these crises is to present the truth to the American people. This president so often would rather shade the truth so that everything looks fine, when in fact this is a crisis that we're all a part of. All Americans are part of this effort to deal with this crisis. And he should be comfortable, not uncomfortable, with telling the American people the truth about what's happening.
You know, I want to ask you a question on a slightly different subject. It has to do with the crisis over oil prices. Now, this has to do with two countries that the president, for whatever reason, has gone out of his way to develop these particularly close relationships with, Saudi Arabia and Russia. What does it tell you that he can't just get on the phone after years of building up these relationships and say, hey, fix this? Isn't this exactly where you should be using the leverage he claims to have been building up?
Well, frankly, what concerned me more today was the fact that the president tweeted out that somehow this crisis on oil prices was going to benefit the American people with lower gas prices. The problem is it's a crisis. We've never had that much of a drop on energy prices for almost 30 years. And when that happens, it creates a very unpredictable marketplace that could impact on our way of life because we are so dependent on that source of energy. So I would have thought that the president would have really spoken to the danger points that we're seeing now with regards to oil. And also, as you say, he should have picked up the phone with Saudi Arabia and with Russia.
Secretary Leon Panetta, so great to have you with us this evening. Stay healthy. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you, John. You too.
Just ahead, Dr. Sanjay Gupta rejoins us to help us take a step back, take a deep breath, and answer more questions about the coronavirus. Also, a live report from Oakland. A cruise ship with passengers infected with coronavirus has just docked. The latest on the condition of the passengers when 360 returns. A lot of fast-moving events tonight on coronavirus, including news we just learned. A source tells CNN that the Trump campaign will announce a rally for tomorrow. They did not say what the location is. So we want to bring back Dr. Sanjay Gupta to talk about that and a lot of different questions that seem like everyone has right now. Sanjay, just in the last segment, before the Trump campaign said they were going to announce a rally, you said the president seems to be taking the coronavirus more seriously. Do you still believe that's the case? I mean, medically speaking, is it prudent to hold a rally?
Well, you know, I mean, several doctors were asked about this today, even at that press briefing, the coronavirus task force. And, you know, the answer was always some variation of everyone has to sort of make this judgment on their own. Clearly, people who are in their 70s or 80s are more at risk. And, you know, Dr. Fauci has said people of that age group or with pre-existing conditions, you know, should as much as possible try and not be in large public spaces. So this clearly seems to fly in the face of that, no question about it. You know, they also said that if the rally were happening in an area where coronavirus was not known to be spreading, perhaps it would be okay. That's what one of the other doctors said. So, look, you know, John, it's been very interesting over the last few weeks because there is hardly any precedent for some of what we're talking about here. And because the virus is so new, I think, recommendations are sort of being altered and tweaked as we go along. But yes, to your general question, I think Dr. Fauci and others have been very clear. The elderly, people with pre-existing conditions such as heart disease, diabetes, hypertension, and lung disease, as much as possible, should not be in large gatherings. And certainly a rally would qualify as that.
And just to be clear, both Democratic candidates still in the race right now are also over 70. We'll talk about that more, I'm sure, in the days and weeks ahead. I do want to ask you, though, about this age thing in general. If the risk is greatest to people 70 years old and older, why are so many schools shutting down?
Yeah.
Middle schools, high schools, colleges, what's going on?
That's a great question. And I think what the real goal of that is when you start talking about the social distancing, it does come with this acknowledgement with younger people, even though they tend to be, you know, somewhat insulated from certainly getting very sick from this virus, even though they can become infected. The concern is that they can still carry it. And if you are someone who's a student and you're in school, you come home and you're spending time with someone who is elderly, even though the young person may not be sick themselves, the concern is by being out in that situation in a crowded school where the virus may be circulating, that they could then bring it home and infect somebody who would be vulnerable. That's the real goal. But it's a good point. It doesn't change the fact that younger people do seem to be pretty protected from this virus.
That's really it, because there are thousands, tens of thousands, could be soon, of kids who will be missing school. And the schools are shutting down so they don't get their grandparents sick. And I'm not making light of that at all. I mean, that might be a serious consideration, but that's what's going on here?
Yeah, I think a lot. It really is this idea that to break the spread of transmission, you've got to stop, you know, any modes of transmission. And we know that even though kids aren't getting sick, they can carry the virus. Mm-hmm. And, you know, these schools, and especially, you know, for young kids in particular, the schools, you know, we know that the viruses, including other viruses, not just the coronavirus, transmit pretty easily. So that seems to be the big part of it. I will say this, that in the past, even going back to H1N1, which I covered extensively, there were 700 schools that were shut across the country back in 2009, 50 in New York City, where you are. And there wasn't clear evidence at that point that it made a huge difference. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that's data that they're going to look at this time to determine whether or not they do any mass school closings.
So on the subject of kids, our congressional reporter Jeremy Herb just tweeted this tonight, quote, Rep. Gohmert is still giving tours despite his contact with someone who tested positive for coronavirus. He explained to the group of several dozen kids and parents about his conversation with the doctor that he didn't have any symptoms and that he wouldn't shake hands. Again, I understand that we don't know yet about third-person transmission from one to the other to the other, right. But just in terms of the public health messaging, this is a congressman who now says he came in contact with someone who had coronavirus, who is quite publicly advertising the fact he's now giving tours in the Capitol.
I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't do that. I mean, look, he talked to his doctor about not necessarily needing to be in quarantine, I guess. That's what I've read. And the CDC doctor said he didn't necessarily need to be in quarantine. But the idea then that you're deliberately going out, even if you're not shaking hands and being around large gatherings of people, I doubt that his doctor would have recommended that.
I'm Dr. Sanjay Gupta. I really appreciate you being with us tonight. I know you have more to do. I'll see you tomorrow morning on New Day.
Got it.
All right, coming up, the Grand Princess cruise ship finally docks in Oakland. Some passengers are allowed off, but some are not. We'll get the latest on the situation next. More in our breaking news. As we reported at the top of the program, that after staying at sea for several days, the Grand Princess cruise ship has docked in Oakland, California, and some people have now been allowed to leave the ship. There were at least 21 people on board with coronavirus. CNN's Nick Watt joins us now live from Oakland. Nick, what more do we know about who exactly is off the ship and who remains on board?
Well, John, the headline is that this is going to take quite some time. 3,500 people aboard that ship, and everybody is going to get tested as they come off. So the first priority was people with acute medical requirements. They, we believe, are now off. Next up will be the 962 people aboard that ship who are California residents. There are buses waiting to take them to Travis Air Force Base, where they will continue their 14-day quarantine. Others will head down to Miramar, down near by San Diego. Then other residents of the U.S. will get put on planes and taken to bases in Texas and Georgia. And also, the U.S. government has been working with the Brits and the Canadians to get their nationals off this ship and out of this country as quickly as possible. They will be bussed onto the tarmac at local airports and put straight on charter planes back home out of the U.S. So this will probably take a couple of days. They'll carry on for another couple of hours now until it gets dark. Then they say they will cease disembarkation overnight, start up again in the morning. And John, one other word, we just heard from a Florida couple. They have already filed suit looking for $1 million in damages against the cruise line, saying that the cruise line put this ship to sea knowing that it was infected. The cruise line tells CNN that the safety and health of passengers and crew is always paramount to them, and they won't comment on ongoing litigation. John?
So, Nick, the majority of people who tested positive for coronavirus, they're crew members. Will they be allowed to leave?
Right. They will not. Yeah, you're right. Of the 46 tested, 21 were positive, 19 were crew. They will not be allowed off. Once all the passengers are off, that ship is going to go back out to sea where the crew will serve the rest of their quarantine away from everybody else. John?
All right, Nick Watt for us in Oakland tonight. Nick, thank you very much. One of the passengers aboard the Grand Princess is Carrie Colstow, a 60-year-old woman from North Dakota who has a serious medical condition separate and apart from coronavirus. She's been diagnosed with stage 4 cancer and is supposed to be going home for treatment. She and her husband had planned the cruise as a vacation in between her radiation treatments. I spoke to Carrie shortly before we came to air. So, Carrie, first of all, how are you doing? How do you feel? I see your smile. Is it genuine?
My smile is genuine right now. We've had a number of crying jags this morning. I'm in a fair amount of pain and on some pretty heavy-duty painkillers. We earlier were given the understanding that I wasn't going to get off today, and so we're actually awaiting getting off the ship any time. They've passed out masks and came and gotten luggage, and so I have no idea where I'm going, but any place off this ship would be great. I've got, as the day goes on, the battle gets tougher with the pain, so hopefully we can hold it together long enough to get somewhere.
So just to be clear, you have been told you're getting off shortly, within hours, but you have no idea where you're going?
That's correct. The only person I've seen or talked to is a man at 3 a.m. in a hazmat suit. He identified himself as a physician and asked me questions about my medical needs. Other than that, through this ordeal, I have talked or heard from no one.
So that person in the hazmat suit is the only person that's aware of your serious medical condition, correct?
I believe they were notified by Senator Kramer's office and various other ways, but on the ship, the only person I've talked to is the man in the hazmat suit at 3 a.m.
And the doctors back in North Dakota, your doctors, what are they telling you now about your treatment? Will it start when you're in quarantine, wherever that might be?
We have no real idea. We sure hope that's the plan because it's imperative that I get both my radiation and my chemotherapy started as soon as possible. We know the cancer is growing. We were told to go ahead and go on the cruise by everybody, including my palliative care physicians. You know, when you have a chronic serious condition like I have, we're always weighing the risks versus what's right for our family and what's right for, you know, everyone else. I know there's lots of folks on this ship that have a story, and they all have a good story. And I don't expect to have preferential treatment, but I do expect that our story gets told too, and how I need to get this treatment.
What have you been doing the last few days to get through this? This trip was supposed to be the one that took your mind off your problems. So how have you been working through these last few days, and how's your family holding up?
Well, they're holding up well. We have two grown daughters who are manning the dog and all the other things that go on back at home. They're, of course, frightened, but we're a very faith-filled family. We believe that good will come out of this and that somehow we'll trust in God and something good will happen. Right now, it isn't terribly evident what that is, but we're hoping that we get some clarity to that soon.
Well, Carrie, I can tell you, with that smile, I know something good will happen. We wish you the best of luck and the best of health wherever you may go, and I hope you find out where that is soon.
We do, too. It's a little unnerving, but it's forward progress, and that's all we're asking for.
Good luck. Thanks so much for speaking with us.
Thank you.
So you heard Carrie say they were hoping to get off the ship at any time. Well, we just got word that moments ago she was able to disembark from the Grand Princess. We'll try to find out where she's headed. I'm sure she's trying to find out, too. We will update you on her progress. And, of course, we wish her all the best. Still more breaking news straight ahead. Reaction to the alarming drop in the stock market today. Why it happened and what might be in store for tomorrow. Markets took a major dive today on the 11th anniversary of the longest bull market in history. It was the single biggest point drop on the Dow in history. Let's get two takes. CNN's Richard Quest, anchor of Quest Means Business, joins us along with Alexis Glick, a financial expert and former executive at Morgan Stanley. She's also CEO of Gen Youth, a nonprofit organization dedicated to nurturing child health and wellness. Richard, just in sum, this was what? A cocktail of concerns over oil prices, coronavirus, and confidence?
The house was on fire already because of coronavirus, and gasoline was poured on the flames by the Saudis, who said they're going to pump oil till their cows come home, when they will push down the price. The market could see no way out. All it sees is trouble, woes and misery. And that's why we came pretty close today, I think almost to capitulation.
Capitulation.
And the degree of uncertainty. You came in already knowing that the market is unstable just with what we know about the coronavirus, but add to it the decision by Russia to opt out and the Saudis to cut prices. Everyone wakes up this morning and oil prices are down 30%. We haven't seen this since the Gulf War in 30 years ago. I mean, that caused a shock to the market.
And you then add in for certain key stocks. I mean, today, Carnival, Royal Caribbean, Norwegian Cruises. These are major companies employing thousands of people, and the stock went down 25%. United Airlines down 10%. The banks were down. This is a broad-based rout of a market that, if not arrested, will lead to a recession.
Just to be clear, the president said today that it's good for the consumer that gasoline prices are going down.
Well, because the reduction in oil prices right now, if you look about the 25% sell-off, what that translates into is in the next couple of weeks, we will probably see gasoline prices at $2 a gallon. So there will be a positive effect on the consumer. The issue is that because of containment, what we're saying to folks is don't travel, right? So it's like, what are the levers we can really put in place to help the market and the economy right now? And that, frankly, is the thing I think that's rattling folks in the market. I had conversations today with about a dozen different CEOs. What they say across the board is, Alexis, we've been dealing with contingency processes. We've shut down any non-essential travel. We're getting everything we need from the CDC. But factories coming back online, which are starting to come back online in China, it's going to take time. Things that have happened in February, we're going to see the ripple effects in March and April, whether it's imports coming in, whether in LA or some of the largest docks in the country. We need this to work through the system. And the question is what are the levers that the government can put in place right now, other than cutting interest rates, adding fiscal stimulus, you know, loan forbearance, things like that? Are we going to help small businesses? Well, 60 million people are employed by small businesses.
The president seemed to hint that he was going to try to do something, announce something tomorrow, a payroll tax cut. Richard, is it enough? Because
no.
You now think, what, chances of a recession are 50-50?
No. Look, people in the market, I thought them are being very polite. When you ask them what they think the chances of a recession, I asked the chief economist of the IMF today what the chances of a US recession, and they all sort of talk about, it's getting more potentially more likely. 50-50 is being generous. If we continue with this disruption, it really goes the other way.
Here's the thing about this. You know, a recession is defined as two consecutive quarters of declines in quarterly GDP. GDP last year was just north of 2%. You have some economists who've come out, some of the leading economists have come out and said, the second and third quarter, we may not even grow at all. Now, the question for everyone I have talked to is the size and length. What everyone is talking about is the uncertainty around the time horizon and what the longer term consequences will be. But I can tell you that with every CEO, and I spoke to the largest companies in the world today, what they're all saying is they have created 90-day contingency plans. So they are well into Q2 in terms of preparation, how they're addressing their factory, their workforce. Now, what they're saying is we're over communicating. We're staying calm. We're building the plans in place. I will tell you one other thing. The entire tech sector came out. Apple, Microsoft, you name it, all the tech giants came out and said they're going to step up and pay hourly workers to stay home. The healthcare industry said they're going to step up and make sure that they're paying for coronavirus tests for the uninsured. So corporate America is looking for ways to step up and help at this moment in time.
Alexis Glick, Richard Quest, I know I'm going to see you bright and early tomorrow morning on New Day. One of the few people who will get some sleep tonight, because investors, they certainly won't. All right, we have just learned that President Trump's incoming chief of staff has gone into self-quarantine. Details next. More breaking news to report. A fifth Republican at that conservative forum now says he is in self-quarantine, and this one is the president's incoming chief of staff. Congressman Mark Meadows' office says he is in self-quarantine as a protective measure. He was advised this weekend that he may have come in contact with a CPAC attendee who tested positive for coronavirus. His office says he's doing this out of an abundance of caution and that testing for him came back negative. Let's check in with Chris to see what he's working on for Cuomo prime time at the top of the hour. Chris.
Listen, God bless Meadows. May he be healthy. Hopefully the test was okay. The concerns about the president are real. If he came into contact with them, he should be tested. You know, this is a really dicey time, my brother. You know, so often in the news, we're trying to decide how to make things sound important so people can care. And now we're in a process of just trying to be a reality check daily. You got Bernie Sanders on tonight. This is arguably the biggest night of his campaign. He's got to make the case. It's got to pay off for him tomorrow. He was on Fox tonight doing a town hall. I'm going to talk to him about coronavirus. He's at risk, too. Mm-hmm. We're all at risk, but we got to stay true to reality and stay together, just like you and I are.
You got it. All right, Chris, we'll be watching. And, of course, the fight for Michigan, that's tomorrow's top prize in the primaries. We'll talk about Bernie Sanders and Joe Biden, how they're battling for votes. That's next. Joe Biden is hoping to repeat his Super Tuesday with more victories tomorrow when six states hold primaries: Michigan, Idaho, North Dakota, Missouri, Mississippi, and Washington State. Senators Kamala Harris and Cory Booker are now both campaigning with the former vice president tonight in Michigan. That state is critical for the former vice president and Senator Bernie Sanders. Seen as Jeff Zeleny takes us inside the fight for Michigan.
Bernie Sanders is looking to Michigan for a campaign comeback.
Tuesday is a very, very important day, and Michigan is the most important state coming up on Tuesday.
It's not only the biggest prize on Tuesday, with 125 delegates at stake. The primary is seen as a trial run for November, as Democrats weigh who has the best chance of defeating President Trump. Democrats have neither forgotten nor forgiven what happened here 4 years ago, as their blue wall of Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania collapsed. Trump is the first Republican presidential candidate to win Michigan since 1988, carrying the state by only 10,704 votes. That number is seared into the minds of many Democrats who believe it's time for Joe Biden to take command of the race.
4 years ago, you supported Bernie Sanders. What changed?
Well, the first thing is that Joe Biden is in the race. He wasn't in the race in 2016. Someone that has the record, results, and the relationships here in Michigan, that I didn't have that choice in front of me before.
Garland Gilchrist is the state's first African-American lieutenant governor. He admired Sanders in 2016, but now believes Biden is building the broadest coalition to defeat Trump. 4 years ago, Sanders' come-from-behind victory in the primary here injected new life into his battle with Hillary Clinton.
And if we win here in Michigan...
Today, he's trying to rekindle that spirit. Yet conversations with some loyal Sanders supporters are taking a practical turn.
We're going to go as far as we can with the Bernie train, but if it comes down to Biden, I'll definitely vote for Biden for sure.
The fear of Trump winning re-election comes up again and again.
That's the whole thing. Do you vote with your beliefs? Because we believe in everything in his platform. Or are you practical? So it's a real struggle.
Do you think that Biden has a better chance in a general election?
He's more moderate. He can get a lot of those kind of middle-of-the-road voters, and Bernie's going to have a harder time.
The Biden campaign is working to build on its Super Tuesday performance. Here in Michigan, that same coalition is key, winning convincingly in the city of Detroit and showing strength across the sprawling suburbs. Since 2016, Lori Goldman has been organizing women voters in the battleground of Oakland County, awakening a new army of political activists. She liked Elizabeth Warren, but now is all in for Biden.
Tuesday will be a bellwether. If Biden wins, which I hope he does, I can breathe a small sigh of relief. If he does not, then I have to worry how Michigan's going to perform.
Now, on the eve of the Michigan primary, that Biden bandwagon is growing. Cory Booker has just taken the stage here for his first endorsement appearance with Joe Biden here in Detroit. Kamala Harris also on hand. So, John, there is a sense here, the Biden campaign looking for a strong finish here to try and close this down. They do believe, mathematically and politically speaking, if Bernie Sanders loses, it'll be challenging. But, John, let's keep an eye on Michigan tomorrow, because Bernie Sanders pulled a surprise 4 years ago. Let's see what happens.
You got John. It. We will be watching very closely. Jeff Zeleny, thank you very much. The news continues, so we'll hand it over to Chris for Cuomo Primetime.
Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
You can now watch CNN's Five Things on Max. Each weekday, Kate Baldwin breaks down the five essential news stories in 5 minutes or less. She'll get you up to speed and on with your day. CNN's Five Things with Kate Baldwin, streaming weekdays exclusively on Max.